Well, good morning. How's everybody doing? You awake? It's the Thanksgiving turkey still putting you to sleep a little bit. So you guys applauded for Tamara. That was amazing. So she got applause this morning. So, you know what? I'm done with Thanksgiving right now and giving thanks. I want to start with some complaining. Is that okay with you? Can we start with complaining, like the opposite of giving thanks? We're going to complain a little bit. We're pretty good about that. I think there's a meme out there that says, you know, if we don't succeed, no, something about complaining. If we don't succeed, then complain about it on Facebook or social media. I can't remember. A horrible joke. I forgot about it. But let's just get into this complaining episode. So the most annoying driving habit. So people complain about everything. The most annoying driving habit is not using a turn signal, using a phone while driving, or going slow in the left lane. What would you say? Most people say there's a survey taken of people. Okay, well, the survey said not using a turn signal. Okay, so not using a turn signal. They obviously didn't survey us. So the most common complaint about a roommate. Anybody ever here have a roommate before? So is leaving a mess or dishes out or eating your food or using your shampoo? A lot of people are saying A. How about B is what the survey said, eating your food. All right, how about this complaint? The most annoying phone habit is talking loud in public, not texting me back right away, or using it while talking face to face. See, yeah, you guys got this. Everybody else agreed on this one. How about this one? The most common complaint about hygiene. So would it be chewing your nails, not wearing deodorant, or popping gum? What do you guys think? Well, apparently the survey says chewing your nails. So if you forgot your deodorant, you're in good company this morning. It's totally cool. All right, the most annoying thing at the table. Would it be singing at the table? Someone shaking the table, like shaking it, or chewing with your mouth open? Yeah, you guys are on that. C, chewing with your mouth open. All right, so people complain about those things. You know, not only that, there's a list of complaints from National Park Service where people call and complain or you send an email and complain about the national parks. I don't know if, has anybody here ever been to a national park before? Well, imagine calling a national park with one of these complaints after your visit. It says, the place where the trails do not exist are not marked well. So are you supposed to mark trails that don't exist? Or the coyotes made too much noise and kept me awake. Please eradicate these annoying animals. These are actual complaints. A small raccoon stole my bag of potato chips. Can I get reimbursed? Really? All right, chairlifts need to be installed so we can get to wonderful views without having to hike to them. And this last one is too many bugs and spiders. Please spray the wilderness to get rid of these pests. It's like, it's part of camping. So, well, we live in a culture that loves to complain. You know, we can complain about anything. You know, it's too fast, too slow, too hot, too cold, too expensive, too gross. And the list can go on and on about things to complain about. One of the things I love about United so far and the culture that we've been able to create in our infancy is that there's no complaining here. There's a lack of complaints. Actually, on those Connect cards that we all fill out every week, we get people thanking us and appreciating us and doing the opposite of complaining. But when the church is known in our culture, in our community, in our world, that's just not what's associated to it, though, is thankfulness and gratitude. It's a lot of complaining. That's what this whole series that we've been going through is all about, called Reimagine. Because when people imagine the church, they have lots of complaints to register. And we're wrapping up this series with one final talk about reimagining these lists of complaints and what it could look like if we just follow Jesus and follow his example. Because one of the things that we found is when people say the church is judgmental or unloving, well, that's not who Jesus was. He was a loving, accepting man. And so we say we're all inclusive here at United Church, meaning we want to include everybody, no matter what background you're coming from. You know, a complaint can be that the church is boring and stiff and traditional. And, you know, that's not who Jesus was. He didn't always follow the rules that the rule keepers thought he should follow. And so he thought outside of the box. And so we want to be a church like that too. And so we've been reimagining church. But we've been reimagining church the way that Jesus imagined it to be in the first place. And so that's the whole purpose of this series. And so instead of complaining, we've been celebrating the church together. So as we finish, though, we're going to close with one final complaint. It's a complaint that we actually want to hear about us. Because it's a complaint that Jesus heard about him and about the company that he kept. And so that's right. I want people to complain about United Church in a certain way. From the early days as well as years down the road, even though our church is probably too young and too small to have too many complaints yet, I hope this one surfaces at some point if it hasn't already. And it's this type of complaint that Jesus heard all the time. And they said this complaint, religious leaders said this complaint about Jesus because they didn't believe he was who he said he was, that the Messiah. And the complaint that Jesus heard was this: why do you hang out with them? So that's the complaint. Why do you hang out with them? Why do you hang out with the people who don't follow the rules? Why do you hang out with that woman? Don't you know her sexual past? Why do you hang out with a person of that race or a person of that gender, a person of that sickness? And the list goes on and on and on. Why do you hang out with them? And so if Jesus had that complaint registered for him, why do you hang out with them? The question that we're going to address this morning, well, who is the church for? If we're a bunch of people that are following Jesus and he got this complaint about why do you hang out with them, who is the church supposed to be for? It's supposed to be for them, for us, for all of us? What does that look like? And practically, we're going to get at what this means. You know, because Bible Answer Man can say, the church is for Jesus. It's all about Jesus, all for Jesus, all through Jesus, and so forth. And that is true. But we're going to get just practical and down to earth by checking out a story from the life and interaction of Jesus with people that he lived with. But before I do that, I think we can get confused because we've been saying we're a church for people that don't go to church. And a lot of times people will be like, oh, so like you don't believe in the Bible or you don't follow Jesus? What does that really mean? And the only organization that I can think of that resembles kind of some of the slogans and values that we've been saying is a gym. And so thinking of a gym for people that don't go to a gym that says there are no judgment zone. Does anybody know what gym that is? Planet Fitness. Hey, you guys have heard that gym, but we're nothing like Planet Fitness. And here's why. Because, first of all, there's no weights in here. But second of all, Planet Fitness, I had a membership of Planet Fitness years ago. And when you would go to Planet Fitness, they don't want like these big beef stick guys in there, you know, that are grunting and making lots of noise. And they actually have what's called a lunk alarm. And they will make noise and a light will go off, supposedly, if somebody's like making too much noise. And they're trying to create a culture where it's just like for out of shape people to go work at the gym. But the thing is, like, if you want to go lose weight at Planet Fitness, it's not the best gym to work out at, because I found out that once you get off the treadmill and you're lifting weights, they have free bagel mornings. And so just load up on carbs. And then they have free pizza night on other nights. And it's like, kind of think about, go to a gym to lose weight and to get in shape and then eat four pieces of pizza when you're done. And so it like counteracts what you're doing. So a church for people that don't go to church, people might think, oh, come here, get a fill of Jesus and of love and grace. And on the way out, we've got some strippers and heroin and anything to fill that addiction for you. That's like the Planet Fitness concept. It's like totally defeating the purpose of a gym. And I'm only joking. That obviously, you're helping people get into shape. But that's not the kind of thinking that we have. Because here's what is important to know about a church for people that don't go to church. There is a definition for a church. A church is a community of people who submit to Jesus and his word. His word being the Bible. So when we say we're a church for people that don't go to church, we are a church. We are people that love Jesus and follow Jesus. But we want to transfer and translate what that means to people who have no clue about who Jesus is and are kind of exploring what does it mean to have a relationship with God. And so when we ask the question, who's the church for? We're just going to take Jesus' cue of who the church is for by looking at this story in Matthew 9. And so in Matthew chapter 9, Matthew is one of his first disciples. He shares this story and it says this. It says, as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Now, if you've been here in this series, Reimagine, tax collectors have come up four times now, and that has not been intentional. The reality is Jesus just hung out with these guys a lot. And we've made fun of tax collectors a little bit because they were kind of like the riffraff of society, untrustworthy. In fact, they were so bad, they were not allowed to be called to a witness stand in a court case because they were untrustworthy. They would get paid off. People would pay them off in order to win a case. And so it was really the person who had the most money would win the court case because they just paid off the tax collectors. So they weren't allowed to testify in court because of this. And yet Jesus sees a tax collector, this untrustworthy person in this culture that their own culture doesn't even want to call to be a part of a court system, of a fair hearing. And Jesus goes up to a tax collector named Matthew and he says, follow me and be my disciple. And we need to slow down in this story because what Jesus is saying and doing in this story is really shocking. He's going to a person who would never be thought of as a religious leader and saying, be my disciple, meaning apprentice under me. I'm a religious leader and I'm going to help people connect to God, inspire them to follow God and to love God. And I want you to take over. I want you to be one of my apprentices and my leaders. You might have apprenticed for or done an apprenticeship out of college or when you're trying to attain to a certain career. And it's because you're learning about that and you go to somebody that you want to learn from. But typically it's people that have that interest. Tax collectors that had no interest in following God, being part of a church or being part of any type of synagogue in that day and age. And yet this is who Jesus went to. So the accusation, why are you with them? This is who he's with. The last person you would think, the person that's least qualified in this culture to be a spiritual leader, Jesus says, I want you to come, be my disciple, and be a future leader of people that will connect to God. And so it says, Matthew got up and followed him. Later, Matthew invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests, along with many tax collectors, and I love this phrase, other disreputable sinners. So not only were tax collectors disreputable, but so was anybody that they hung out with. Just by nature of being a tax collector, if you hung out with them, you were disreputable. And that's why people didn't like Jesus. Like anybody who hung out with these gentlemen were not reputable. And so is Jesus really reputable? And Matthew doesn't hang out with a great crowd. And that's why it says this. And it says this too about the religious leaders of the day, because they were intrigued by Jesus, curious about him, didn't understand him at all. And it says the Pharisees saw this. They asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? There's some other translations that help us understand this word sinners. It has a little baggage, but here's some helpful verbiage. Why does your teacher eat with such scum? Or what kind of example is this from your teacher? Acting cozy with crooks and riffraff. See, the translation is they don't like who Jesus is hanging out with. And they don't like anyone who is associated with them as well, especially a religious leader. And their view of how to be religious was we're too good to be around them. And so if we want to be like God, we need to be away from them. So that's why this complaint comes. Why are you with them? Because if you're spiritual, if you're connecting to God, you'll get away from them and be closer to God. And that's kind of the thinking. That's the thinking throughout the ages, too. In 400 AD, there was this man called Simeon who at the age of 16, he wanted to be very much like God, was very committed to God, and he became a monk. And so for a year and a half of being a monk, he lived in a hut all by himself. But that wasn't good enough. He wasn't getting far enough from them, the riffraff of society, to be like God. And so he actually built a little dwelling on top of an ancient Roman pillar. And he lived up there. People would give him bread and water. I don't know how he went to the bathroom up there, but he lived up there. And he even decided that wasn't high enough. And eventually he ended up on an ancient pillar that was 50 feet tall. And he put a little fence around it, so I guess when he was sleeping and he rolled over at night, he wouldn't fall off the pillar at night. And he was up there for 37 years. I mean, that's ridiculous. And it sounds ridiculous, and it is ridiculous, because you don't become more like God by just getting away from people that you want to be around horizontally by getting closer to God vertically. But this is what this man does. And this is the kind of culture that Jesus is engaging in, and even some thinking that still exists today. So when Jesus heard this, this is what he responds by saying. He says, healthy people don't need a doctor, sick people do. See, it's kind of a phrase, it's a little bit random, it's a little bit out of the blue, has nothing to do with the context of anything that's happening, even right now, talking about a hospital situation in light of everything we've been talking about so far, it doesn't fit yet. And it's kind of like a Captain Obvious statement. Yes, we know that sick people need doctors. But here's what's happening in the parallel that Jesus is making. He's saying, you religious leaders, you've opened up a hospital. And when people come that just need a checkup into the emergency room, you let them in right away. But the people that are coming that can barely breathe and that are about to die, that are being overwhelmed by life, you actually make them wait in the waiting room. And so, yeah, it's an obvious statement, but the statement that he's making is you care about people that are healthy. I care about people that are sick. See, this is why Jesus came, to be with them. And the people that are sick, it's not a derogatory way. He's just saying, like, these are the people that need God. These are the people that might be the misfits of society. You've pushed them off. You've pushed them away from God. And everything they think about God is your rules and your laws. And I have come to show them that there's a better way. Because he says this, I have come to call not those who think that they're righteous, meaning good, but for those that are sinners. And he's kind of like throwing it in their face. Like he's saying, like, you know, I actually came for people that recognize they're a sinner. Because it doesn't matter how much you escape from other people and stay away from them, you're still a sinner. What the Bible teaches about this word sin is that we've all fallen short of a perfect standard of that God has, and we've fallen short of that, and it makes us a sinner. So we've rejected God, all pain, shame in our life, all broken relationships, it all comes from sin in this world, and that's what separates us from God. But this is why Jesus came, and this is what is said about Jesus in the Bible. For God made Christ, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sin, so that we could be made right with God through Christ. And so that phrase, that God made Christ, the person Jesus never sinned, he was an offering for us so that we could be made right with God through Christ. See, the translation is that Jesus took your place and my place so that we could be with God, and that's grace. It's something that we don't deserve, and it's how we can be connected with God, is by trusting and following Jesus Christ. And it's not because you didn't hang out with them. It's because Jesus died for you, and we connected with him. See, the biggest complaint against Jesus, if it was being against them, is because I came for them. I came for people that are far away from God, that are lost, that are seeking and not finding, that are searching and feel distant from God. You know, that's why we started with that U2 song this morning. Still haven't found what I'm looking for. Jimmy Kimmel Show just had Bono and the U2 band sing that song in the last year. And he set that up by saying, this is a gospel song with a restless spirit. You know, because we're all seeking for something that is lost. So a couple of years ago, there was an ad in the Atlanta Tribune that read like this. It said, single black female seeks male companionship. Ethnicity, not important. I'm a very good-looking girl who loves to play. I love long walks in the woods, long car rides, camping, cozy winter nights, lying by the fire. Candlelight dinners will have me eating out of your hand. This is where it starts getting saucy here. Rub me the right way and watch me respond. I'll be at the front door when you get home wearing only what nature gave me. Kiss me and I'm yours. Call blank number and ask for Daisy. 15,000 men responded to this ad, only to reach the Atlanta Humane Society, where a 9-week-old black lab named Daisy lived. Now talk about not finding what you were looking for. And then all the women are like, yes, bunch of perverts. Get what they deserve. You say, we could have a hard time looking for love in this world, and U2's song is still, that was 30 years ago that they wrote that song, still true today. But it's a timeless principle. Listen to this quote by a physicist, mathematician, philosopher named Blaise Pascal talking about not finding what we're looking for. He says, what else does this craving and this helplessness proclaim but that there was once in a man a true happiness of which all that now remains is the empty print and trace? This he tries in vain to fill with everything around him. But this infinite abyss can be filled only with an infinite immutable object. In other words, by God himself. There's a poet and philosopher in the Bible who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. And he actually says that God is placed within us, that the eternity is in our heart. And so there's this phrase, like there's this hole in our heart that Christianity has kind of coined. Like there's a hole in our heart that we need to fill. And the reality is that as people, we try to fill that void that's eternal with temporary things in this world. So we become addicted to certain things. That's why we fall into brokenness and sin and shame and guilt. And because we run to these things that to try to fill that eternal void in our heart that only an eternal being can fill. And that's why Jesus came. Because he's an eternal being that came to earth to fill that void for us. So Jesus came for people who've messed up their lives trying to fit the wrong thing in the hole. In fact, over and over we see Jesus doing this with men and women as he encounters a woman who was married 5 times And she's like, she's on her fifth try trying to make a marriage work, and she still hasn't found what she's looking for in a husband. And Jesus comes and says, what you're looking for, that is me. And it's not a romantic relationship with me. It's being satisfied, being connected to God through me. He goes to people that are sick, a paralytic and a leper, and sicknesses of that day. And he tells them the most important thing is not that he can heal them, which he does, but that he can forgive their sins and connect them to God. He goes to people that are demon-possessed, and he doesn't send them to an asylum or let them die there like we would. He would said he cast demons out of them. He says that you don't need to be alone in this. I am with you. And he fills this void over and over with person after person when he lived. Over and over, his actions, we see him reach out to the lost, to the lonely, the rejected, even crazy people that he lived with. People that society shunned, kind of the misfits. Because we learn that Jesus is for people on the fringes. And so what kind of church or who is the church for? If Jesus is for certain people that lived on the fringes, that the world pushed away, he was pulling them back. See, one of the things that we get most excited about is when people get pulled back in to a life of purpose and connecting with God. So we had a baptism today with Melissa being baptized, and there was great applause for Melissa and the profession that she made and the step that she made in being baptized this morning. And that's what we're going to get most excited about, more than a good message or warm fuzzies that music might give us or, you know, making new friends in a church. We're going to get most excited about people who have been pushed far away from God or feel pushed far away from God, coming and connecting with God and saying that I'm going to be united and connected to him. And if you need hope, if you need to be washed clean, understand that Jesus gave his life so that you can be set free from your past, your sin, and your shame. And because of this, because that we're a church for people on the fringes, we're going to cast our net wide. We are okay when people come to United and they don't agree with everything that's said here. That's okay with us. Jesus hung out with people that didn't believe who he was and what he said about himself. And so we're totally fine when there's people that come here and they say, I don't agree with that. That's okay. You don't have to agree to come and be here. We're going to cast our net wide and reach as many people as we can from all different backgrounds to be part of this thing called United, where we're trying to help people be connected to God. And because we're a church that's for people on the fringes, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to do things and try things that we just kind of experiment. As a new church, you're going to see us do things that we might not do again in another year. It's because, well, we're just trying it. We're just trying different things to reach people who aren't connected to God. And we're okay if it fails. And we'll celebrate when it succeeds. But it's going to get messy at sometimes. And the people are messy. So as we interact with people, you know, that gets messy. But we're going to be patient in the process, because one of the things we learn about the character of God is that it says he's patient. It says the Lord is patient for your sake. He does not want anyone to be destroyed, but wants everybody to repent, to turn to Jesus Christ. Have you given up on somebody recently, thinking that all hope is lost? You know, I'm not even going to invite them. I know what they'll say. No, you don't. Because God is working in people's lives. God is doing things that we don't always know. And now I'm not encouraging you to enable certain behavior. Like when I say don't give up on people, just continue to enable a certain addictive behavior or personality or whatever. But don't give up on praying for them. Don't give up on loving them. Don't give up on inviting them. Don't give up on going and being and hanging out with them and showing them the love of Jesus. See, we need to be reminded of why United started just 2 months ago. Because we are a church for people on the fringes. We want to be that church. The accusation was, why do you hang out with them? We want to be a church that's that church. So when people say, are you the church that plays music a little loud? Yep, we do. We're that church. Are you the church that, you know, when people get together for a small group, it's okay if they have cigars and beer? Yep, that's totally cool with us. It's okay. They're not going to hell for that. Are you the church that's also in the community and you serve people like crazy and you have these blue t-shirts on and you're always showing up and trying to help? Yep, we're that church. Are you the church that when somebody wants to invite their non-Christian friend to church, they'll actually go to United instead of their own church? Yep, we're that church. That's happened a couple times already. Where people have come to United from another church because they heard about the environment here that is so welcoming and loving. You have helped create that environment. The team here has helped create that environment. But that is the church that we're going to be. We are the church that is going to be for people who are far away from God, God's lost children, and just proclaiming that you are welcome back. And if you want to know if we're the church that is going to do whatever it takes to reach this community, we are. That's how we think, that's how we pray, and that's how we want to act. And I want to be real clear when I say we are that church. I'm not trying to be arrogant, like we're better than other churches. We're not playing a comparison game, but we're that church that's going to be for them. Remember the complaint I want to hear? Is that, wow, why would you do that for them? Why would you hang out with them? Well, we're all just a bunch of sick people who need a doctor. Let me tell you why I'm so passionate about this and reaching people on the fringe. Because I know that I'm a person on the fringe. I know I battle loneliness and often want to have pity parties and have people celebrate my loneliness with me. But because I'm lonely, nobody does. I battle anger and I get angry about things I shouldn't get angry about. I blow things out of proportion. I can live in extremes. I can be extremely up and extremely down. I feel like all the time. I'm not really good at interpersonal communication. A lot of times I say things that I don't mean, and I mean things that I can't articulate. That's why I have notes here on the stand, because otherwise you'd not understand a thing that I would say. So it's not just interpersonal communication, it's even public communication. I battle the fact that should I be a lead pastor? I can't do this. Why would God have me to do this? And I beat myself up over mistakes that I would make, over the lack of discipline in my life when I feel like pastors should look a certain way and I don't look that way. I battle thinking that I should be more organized and have better rhythms to my life, and I don't. I'm insecure about who I am. I'm impatient when things don't go faster and farther than I want them to go. End of the day, I feel like I'm a good person though, because I want to help people and I want to do good. My heart goes out to people that suffer. But even when I'm really honest with myself, even those times, I feel like I still see selfishness. The good things that I want to do always seem to have different selfish motives to it. And I'm not trying to be morbidly introspective. I'm just trying to be real and honest with you. I am a person on the fringes. And so why is this church for people on the fringe? Because the only community that wanted me was the church. Besides my family, the people that loved me the most and cared about me the most were people that followed Jesus. Because I'm the misfit and the riffraff that the Pharisees were talking about. And if we're honest with ourselves, all of us are to some degree. So this is why I have to be part of this church. It's because I need to be reminded that Jesus is for me and he's for you. I need to be reminded that I'm okay because of Jesus. And that's it. That's all I need is Jesus to be okay. Jesus is the only reason that I believe this. And because he created me, that's important. So even after my screw-up decisions, he still loves me and cares about me. And even after all of your screwed up decisions, he still loves you and cares about you. See, United is a place for misfits, for people that don't always fit in. But you fit in with God's plan. Because I love when people are invited to United Church, boldly because our church knows that they'll be loved and accepted here. I love to invite people who don't like church or like to go to church, because I tell them, perfect, we're a church for people that don't go to church. We're the perfect place for you to come. I know you'll be loved and accepted here. And if you want to find purpose and meaning and understand God's plan for you, this will be a great place for you to connect. And I want to end with this. If you find yourself on the fringes this morning, welcome home. Because Jesus created you. And more importantly than that, he died for you to show you how much he loves you, regardless of how awkward you are, how mentally unstable you are, how addicted you are, how lonely you are, how empty you are, beautiful or ugly. Maybe you're the starter of a football team, or maybe you're the bench warmer. Maybe you've been abused and abandoned. Maybe you've reached the top of the mountain and found emptiness and been in the valley and suffered great loss. Maybe you've let others down or you've been divorced. He loves you. He died for you. And this can be your church home because of who Jesus is, not because of who we are. Because we are that church because of who Jesus was. If it was a complaint about Jesus, why do you hang out with them? We want it to be a complaint about us. We want to be that church. Let's pray.